Good morning on Thursday, September 27th, 2012. You are listening to Brian and Gabe Live. From San Francisco, this is Brian Madden. Thank you all for joining today. Joining me in the studio from VMware, previously Wenova, is Mr. Tom Nickel.
Hello. Nice to meet everyone.
Gabe is here from Omaha.
Yeah, you bet.
And let's see. I'll pull up our chat. We've got our chat window rolling. Let's say good morning here.
Oh, this is a good start. Down with VDI is the first.
But that could be either way. Like, man, I'm so down with VDI. That's just tight, man. Or it could be.
Or it's like, a huge Mirage fan.
Ooh.
Yeah, I can get on board with that.
VDI, we have a VDI delusion. So I was at in New York earlier this week for Storage Decisions, which was an event, and they have give a presentation there about VDI and storage and all this kind of stuff. And when we walked out of that, I talked to a lot of storage professionals, and they were like, man, this VDI thing, it's tough. And I'm like, yeah, it is tough. And they're like, so what do you do? And I'm like, well, as a matter of fact, listen to the show on Thursday.
I just happen to have this book right here in my jacket.
Yeah. Man, you know, I could have, if I, like, my life is already pretty, like, you know, D-list as it is. I mean, the presentation I gave last week was in Houston, was at the Houston Galleria. It's a hotel attached to a mall.
Nice.
And I'm not kidding you, the events room are on the other side of, like, the mall causeway. So it literally is, like, there's a Foot Locker and an Apple Store and a Cinnabon and, like, the Tech Target easel, which is, like, Brian Madden this way. And that wasn't enough. Like, selling my books, I shouldn't say my books, these are Gabe and Jack and all of us, selling these books at the back of the room at a conference.
You should have done a tie-in promotion with Cinnabon. I think that could have driven a lot of traffic.
Actually, I'm telling you, was the break food, was it like Annie Ann's and Sparrow?
God, could you imagine? You know,
we just talked about Sparrow too.
I mean, the thing is, so Facebook. You know, we've got the BrianMadden.com fan page on Facebook, and they give you demographics of your crowd. So it says your typical fan is male, age 35 to 44. You know, so
tell me something. We had to sign up for Facebook to learn that.
But we were talking about Twitter earlier. Yesterday, I just got my 12,000th Twitter follower.
Wow.
Coles 111, thank you for that. I'm assuming the your Cinnabon is on the way.
I'm approaching 3,000. At what point do they start sending you stuff? Didn't you just get random stuff in the mail at some point?
Yeah, there's this. Yeah, like, people start promoing, and they, like, I got like a Fox Sports jacket and stuff like that, and they're like, you don't have to mention us, but by the way, this is because of your Twitter, so do whatever you want with that.
Sweet.
And
if you want to wear it on the air, you know.
Yeah, whatever you want, just take it. So anyway, though, we are today talking about down with VDI, right?
Not quite.
All right, that's
how to compliment VDI when VDI isn't quite what you're looking for.
Yeah, okay, I like that. So to kind of set the stage, you know, I mean, so Gabe and I, in our book, you know, VDI Delusion, we were talking about how, you know, the desktop is evolving. We have physical desktops. We have physical laptops. VDI is another form factor of delivering a Windows desktop to a user. A client hypervisor, type 1 and type 2, is another form factor. But really, all of these things, it's about managing Windows, managing the Windows environment, the applications, the personality, the settings, all that sort of stuff. And frankly, you know, whether you deliver it via a desktop, a laptop, a client hypervisor, a VDI, a remote desktop, that just depends on the situation, because VDI is cool for some reasons. In some cases, like, I can walk up to any computer on the planet and in 100 keystrokes or less have my full corporate desktop, you know, from any platform. So there's value to that. But if you're just wanting a way to, like, get better management in your environment, you don't need VDI, because you can better manage all the laptops that are there. And of course, VDI doesn't work offline, and, you know, all those kinds of things. So we're looking at VDI as a, you know, like, one of many options, one of many ways of delivering Windows desktops to users. And I first met with Wenova 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And
that was pretty early days.
You shot a video with Izzy, right?
Yeah, they had just left Cisco, because these were the guys, founders of Wenova. The Cisco, the wide area network acceleration, like, this is what they
Yeah, that's what they did. So that's one of the reasons the Mirage solution worked so well over the WAN. A lot of our engineers and our founders came from Cisco, and they were acquired into Cisco via a company called Actona. And Actona basically became their WAS unit, which is, I think, a multi-billion dollar business at this point. So, you know, Mirage is definitely very effective over the WAN, which is one of the things we pride ourselves on, especially in situations where VDI is, you know, not a great solution, maybe at a remote branch office or something like that.
So I guess just to level set, and there's a lot of familiar faces – well, familiar handles, I guess, in the chat room. But I know a lot of people are going to listen to this show later and stuff. My tweet on Mirage is going to explain it. It's going to say it's like desktop management with layers, easy updates, but you can like do it to a laptop. So it's not like a VDI. It's not a VM. It's you know, all the users kind of Windows installed on their laptops, but Mirage is like a management layer. So can you give me the elevator?
Sure, I'll give you kind of like a quick and dirty overview. You know, obviously anyone who's familiar with desktop virtualization or familiar with VDI, they're familiar with that architecture. And you know, the key component of VDI is you've got a desktop running somewhere in the data center, and that's kind of its core architecture, fundamental. We've taken the opposite approach with the Mirage solution. What we've really done is we've said, okay, there are plenty of organizations that either have lots of laptops or desktops, or in this case now even unmanaged VMs, or in some cases even a persistent view pool, for example. So persistent is kind of the key word there. But for the case with like laptops and desktops, you know, there are people who understand VDI and they like the advantages that VDI would offer. It's just not realistic for them, you know, especially if they had a large fleet of laptops or desktops. So what Mirage does, you install a little client on your laptop or your desktop or whatever's running Windows XP or Windows 7. And then we do what you said. We kind of like logically layer it. We don't manipulate anything. We just kind of keep track of what's there and what, you know, logical layer that would belong to, whether it's your user profile or user data or user installed apps, whatever. And we keep track of that so that IT can gain some, you know, management granularity when they start managing from the data center. And so after we've done that kind of logical layering, we'll actually centralize a complete virtual copy of that desktop into the data center. And then that's what really empowers an IT person to manage centrally while all of your end users are executing locally. So that's one of our kind of like quippy phrases, manage centrally, execute locally. And that's basically what that comment means.
And so when you begin with this, I mean, this is existing laptops. Like, it doesn't have to be a greenfield installation, right? Like, it can be like a Tech Target. We got, you know, 50 people. Well, all right, it's only 10 in the morning. There's 50 desks out there.
But 50 desks and 3 people in the video studio.
But
6 of those desks are built around our studio.
Storm puppets and boxes. I can have my existing XP, my Win 7 laptop.
Exactly.
That I've been using for like a year, and it's got all my shit on it, and it's all ready to go.
Exactly. And that's actually one of our strong suits. So you don't have to format a device or install a hypervisor or anything like that. You take a normally functioning Windows XP or Windows 7 device, whatever it is, as long as it's persistent. You install a little 4-megabyte Mirage client onto it, and then everything else basically starts happening in the background from the end user's perspective.
So like, to be clear again, like my laptop right now, I've been using for years with all my garbage on it. I can pop the Mirage client on there, and it starts doing what?
Absolutely. So you'd install the Mirage client. The IT administrator would then basically begin the centralization process. From your perspective, you'd install the client. The IT guy would kind of do his thing in the background. And then your laptop would basically start centralizing a virtual copy of itself over to the data center. And some key things to note about that is it sounds kind of like, oh, my gosh, how am I going to work while it does that? Well, we've actually taken a lot of care to implement client-side auto-throttling. So we'll actually monitor what you're doing on that laptop, whether you're logged in or logged out, what your CPU and RAM look like, what your bandwidth looks like. We'll actually monitor that so that when the Mirage client does its thing in the background and it's really just working in the system tray doing its thing without any user interaction, we'll make sure that we're not actually interrupting whatever you're actually doing on that laptop at that point in time. So you could actually absolutely take that, you know, Windows XP laptop or whatever, with all your junk and MP3s and videos and all that stuff, just install the Mirage client. We'll do our thing kind of in the background, and you don't have to worry about a thing.
It's almost like the way that these, like, Mozy and Carbonite and those kinds of things work, right? Like, where it's just sort of for Dropbox. I mean, it's like Dropbox in my laptop. So I install this agent, and it just starts. And the wide area networking acceleration stuff that the founders knew, that's where that comes in, right?
Yeah, so it's like if you take the Dropbox model, it's exactly like that, only instead of just backing up files, we're doing a complete virtual clone of that endpoint. So with Dropbox, you could restore files to like a new device if you lost it, for example. But your user-installed applications would not be a part of that Dropbox puzzle. So we've kind of taken that Dropbox model and expanded it to the entire device. So if you lost that Windows XP laptop with not only your data but also your user-installed apps, you could go to Best Buy, purchase a new laptop, doesn't matter if it's the same maker, model, or whatever. And then as long as it also had Windows XP, you could literally transfer all your user-installed apps, your profile, your data. It would be everything you had on that previous device that's now gone or broken on that new device.
So in some ways, this is like almost how I wish like Dropbox would work myself. Like if Dropbox has all my data, then like I don't want to use VDI because I travel a lot and I get my laptop and I want it to be, you know, like fast performance and all that kind of stuff. But if it's going to – like I actually do use CrashPlan. And so CrashPlan backs up all my stuff. So like all my files are somewhere in CrashPlan land. And like it kind of would be cool if I could just sort of push a button and be like, oh, I you know, like would like to boot this somewhere else. Like I just need to get something really quick. And like you don't need my OS to get – like I mean the OS is the OS, right? So like if it just had all my files, I could just sort of connect to that.
Exactly. And that's kind of, you know, our approach. So, I mean, we're not necessarily, a good bare metal provisioning solution. But when you have a laptop that's got Windows 7 or Windows XP and you've just lost your device that also had Windows XP or Windows 7, we can restore all of that stuff. And it's kind of funny. I mean, I think that's how most people wish a lot of the file-based backup recovery systems worked. Because, I mean, at least in my experience, it's pretty rare for me to say, oh, no, I lost 6 random files today. It's kind of like you either lose the whole device – or for the most part, it's rare to lose, you know, like a chunk of files, you know, short of maybe like you have multiple hard drives and one goes down or something. Usually it's a device disaster that goes wrong. The laptop breaks, it's stolen, whatever. So, you know, if you use traditional file-based backup, it's great that you can get your files back, although I would say in some ways it's really not even that seamless. It either takes forever to download or you have to pay them to ship you a hard drive or something like that. So at least with us, you know, we solve the user-installed app and profile problems too. I mean, getting your files back, that solves one third of your problem. You still got to reconfigure the whole thing with those systems. You've got to reinstall every – you've got to remember the applications you had and then reinstall them, find the installers. So it's kind of a big pain. Even if you have all your files and folders backed up, when you lose a laptop, that's still kind of like a third of the battle. That's still kind of an arduous process once you get a new laptop.
So can you guys – like if I've got apps that are pre-installed, like do I have to install the app once the Mirage client is installed on there? Or like if the app is pre-installed, you'll figure out that –
Yeah, absolutely. So from the second you install the Mirage client, we'll centralize a complete virtual clone of that endpoint. That'll include every application you've installed from the day you got that laptop to right then when you install the Mirage client. And then after that, we'll keep it completely synchronized. So the Mirage client will take everything that you've got already and centralize it, and then we'll continue to keep it synchronized with the data center. So you don't have to worry about, you know, going back and installing stuff or anything like that. It's all, you know, we'll centralize the whole thing. And the other key thing to mention just from an architecture perspective, because this is probably starting to sound like a lot of storage, but on the storage side, we're actually, you know, pretty efficient. Since we're not running desktops in the data center like VDI, for one, we can use tier 2 or tier 3 storage, so it keeps your storage costs down. And we have highly effective deduplication. We do global deduplication. So if you have 1,000 end users and they all have a Windows 7 laptop, ultimately we're not going to store 1,000 copies of 10 gigabytes worth of Windows 7 in the data center. We'll store it once and then we'll keep track of who else has those bits and what the deltas are.
Does the client agent know that too? So when I'm backing up, like I don't have to back up my whole laptop. It knows that, like, you know, kernel.dll or whatever.
Exactly. And so that's the, you know.
Wait, that happens. So the client agent knows what it – data center already has and doesn't send that again.
Exactly. And that's why we rely on the on local execution. I mean, if you've got a laptop or a desktop, you have all this compute power. So why would we transfer 10 gigs over the WAN and then figure it out when we can leverage the CPU and RAM power of the device, send over a very small kind of like manifest file of the endpoint, compare that against what's in the data center, and then send a new manifest file back down to the client. The client will say, okay, here's what I actually need to compress and send over the WAN. So if you've already synced your entire laptop and all you've done in a week – let's say you haven't connected in a week, you've been traveling, you're somewhere where you don't have Wi-Fi, you've made a few files. Next time you connect the laptop up to, you know, the network, the Mirage server will do a scan and we'll figure out exactly what's new. And we'll only send those changes over to the network.
Also, if iTunes 10.8 or whatever the new one is, like iTunes 10 comes out while you're out of the office, someone else who's in the office had iTunes 10, it sent all those bits across the wire. You plug in a week later, and it says, hey, here's all the new files. And the data center can say, oh, actually, all these I already have, so I only need the ones that...
Absolutely. So instead of us sending those files again, we'll just say, oh, we noticed that this laptop that just connected, Brian's laptop, he also has the new iTunes version. So map these files to his manifest file, but don't store or upload them again. Exactly.
So, okay, so all this conversation so far is pretty badass, but this is... but it's all on the kind of like the data backup, data management. Like, this to me sounds like way like enterprise crash plan kind of stuff,
right?
And like, it makes me want to talk about how you guys are going to integrate with Mozy and all that. And this is all like later on. But Wenova came out of like desktop management,
right?
You know, like hey, this is an alternative to VDI type thing. But nothing we talked about is that
correct? So we've kind of covered like one facet of the product, and I'd say our product divides into kind of like three key facets. One is the DR stuff, which is kind of what we just talked about. But once you have all that stuff centralized in the data center, you've got kind of like your DR solution up and running, for lack of a better term. IT can actually take that a step further, and they can basically attach reference machines in the data center and then capture base layers off of those reference machines. So a reference machine would be, you know, a standard Windows XP or Windows 7 device. They'd patch it, update it, install the apps that they want on that device, capture a base layer. Then they can apply that base layer down to an endpoint or a collection of endpoints out in their field. And what will happen is the endpoint devices will download that base layer or what's missing from that base layer, and then they'll directly blend those changes into that device. So keep in mind that we're not streaming a desktop down. Even though you're downloading base layer bits from the Mirage server, it's with the intent to apply it directly to that laptop, not to have this continuous like stream or anything like that. So IT provisions a base layer, sends it out to the endpoint devices, and then we'll compare the differences between those two at the endpoint level, and then say, okay, let's add it, let's blend in this patch that's there, and let's blend in Office 2010, which is in this base layer. We'll apply it directly to that laptop. And then once that user performs a reboot, all the stuff that's in that base layer has now been directly applied to that endpoint also. You can disconnect it from the Ethernet and Wi-Fi. It'll all still be there. It'll all still work. It's all still purely local execution. So that's kind of like the centralized management part of this. And aside from the base layer stuff, they can do additional things actually on the DR side. Without base layers, you can still do snapshot restore. So if a user calls and says, hey, my laptop was great 2 days ago, now it's busted, you can actually apply a snapshot, bring their OS layer stuff back to 2 days ago, but without overriding or affecting their user data stuff. So any files they made in the last 2 days would persist, but we'd fix the OS that was working 2 days ago that wasn't working now.
And the differentiation of that, is that kind of where you're like part of your IP? Like the, because this, so getting into layers, because there's, and this is what some of the conversation in the chat is about, is you know, the word layers in the Windows virtual desktop world, I mean, it means different things to kind of different people.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like your layers are not like the way that like app virtualization layers work, or like Unidesk works, where it's sort of like separate, completely isolated components. You're sort
exactly.
of like
you're We're sort of purely logical. And so that's another key distinction with some of the third-party vendors that do layering type stuff. And it's kind of unfortunate that layers can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. You could also call, you know, we've used the term base image and base layer kind of like analogously in the past. So our base layers, all that's happening there is the client, the Mirage client on an endpoint is basically scanning that endpoint and breaking it up logically. And we're saying, okay, this is user files. This is the user profile stuff. These are applications this user has installed. This is the OS layer. This is the driver layer. And we're not actually taking those bits and storing them in some separate partition or breaking them up or anything like that. It's still just a Windows system. We're just categorizing where stuff is so that when you do some of this image management or the DR stuff – so a good example, when you do DR recovery, if you've lost a laptop and you buy a new one and you go through that process with Mirage, you're actually given three options. You can do a full system restore, which will take that entire – centralized virtual desktop and apply it to the new device. So that's all of the layers. Or you can pick the user installed apps, user profile, and user data layers and apply just that, which basically means you're saying, okay, I want all my user stuff back on this device, but you know it's up and running. I don't need any of the OS stuff. Or you can do just the user data and profile. So you can actually install the user installed apps and just do your data and profile. And so even though we're not manipulating stuff at the endpoint device, we're really just keeping track so that we can do these more kind of granular operations. And DR is kind of a good example of that.
And so you're not – yeah, there's no like isolation or virtualization sort of between these layers. It's just sort of saying we think these bits are probably more user-specific bits, and we think these bits are application-specific, and we think these bits are system-specific.
Correct. We'd like to think we're a little more confident than thinking. We'd like to think we know, and we're pretty good at it.
You'd like to think you know.
But, that's good. That was ironic. We're pretty good at our engineering team is actually very, very well-versed in where Windows store stuff. They're very good in Windows programming, and that's I can't go into a lot of details, half because I don't know half of the details and the other half because some of that's kind of like our secret sauce. But we have some engineers who are very good at isolating, what should belong to certain layers without actually manipulating. And, the desktop virtualization thing, that's another kind of more holistic point. I mean, you could make a case that in a lot of ways we're not desktop virtualization, at least from the client perspective, even though we're keeping this centralized virtual copy. It's really more data storage and manipulation and synchronization than it is desktop virtualization. But if you talk about desktop virtualization, I think desktop virtualization is a big umbrella. And the goal is ultimately, lower my cost of ownership and management of my end user stuff.
I like to call it abstracting all those different components of Windows, the users, the applications, the user environment, that kind of a thing, because that's really all we're trying to do with desktop virtualization as a whole in an effort to manage our desktops. So and this is – if that's the definition of desktop virtualization, then this certainly fits into that.
Exactly. And that's exactly kind of where we've gone with it. So I agree completely.
I'll go ahead, Gabe.
I was going to ask. So, with regards to the user specific layers, is that information, any changes that are made there, is that information trickled back into the data center? Because we know, and this is one of the misconceptions that I had after the last time we had one of these podcasts with Barry and Jesus from Intel. Was that the OS? I got out of this that the OS was streamed down, and that's not the case. But the user information, those layers, those are synchronized and kind of streamed back and forth between the data center, right?
Okay, so we do use the term streaming. I wish we had never actually used that term because it gets a little confusing because of what people think streaming is.
Right.
So let me kind of answer this in two different ways. First and foremost, we are synchronizing everything that's on that client endpoint with the data center. Everything's soup to nuts literally is being synchronized on a regular basis whenever you're connected to the MRA server. That includes files, profile, installed apps, OS, drivers, all that good stuff. So it's a complete virtual copy that we're keeping synchronized. Now, the place that we've used the term desktop streaming is really only related to a disaster recovery situation. And our version of streaming is related to WAN optimization, actually. So when you restore a complete device, you lost your laptop or whatever, and you have a replacement, we've actually broken up the DR process into two separate download phases. The first download phase is what we refer to as a prefetch. And the prefetch is going to find all the stuff that we've figured out is absolutely critical to getting that end user back up and running. It's a bare minimum set of stuff that will allow that user to get back up and running quickly. And then once they're back up and running, which is, like after one reboot, they've got kind of like their initial stuff, they're back into Windows. What we'll do in the background is that's when we do our second phase of download, which is called desktop streaming. And that's where we take a lot of the user stuff that we haven't deemed as, mission critical, and we'll stream that all back down in the background. So that's kind of very like Dropboxy. Like you have a new device, you just installed Dropbox. This is like our Dropbox functionality that we're doing in the background. The only difference is that with our desktop streaming here in a DR situation, if you happen to double click, so all the icons will be there. If you double click on an icon for a file that hasn't been downloaded down yet, or even an application that hasn't had all of its bits download yet, we'll queue all of that to the very front, download it immediately. So it's kind of like this background sync / on-demand thing that we've got going on. And the goal was really just – it was user experience. An end user's laptop's broken. They want to get back up and running as quickly as possible. So get them back into an OS so they can work. Get them the files that they absolutely need. Queue the stuff they need on demand as they need it. And everything else, it's like you don't need 10 gigabytes worth of music to get back up and running. So why right. download all that in the first phase of our DR scenario? Just do that in the background and use it as you need it. So that's what we refer to as desktop streaming. And again, I wish we'd kind of picked a better name. Maybe I'll pitch that to our PM team. But that's how we define streaming. So, so once again, to circle back to your original question, we do, however, keep everything synchronized regardless of what device you're on.
And that's nothing, in real time.
Exactly. It's real time. Okay. It syncs, you know, regularly. But nothing ultimately – our solution is not dependent on the network from an end-user working perspective. You can, you know, take out your Ethernet cable. You can disable Wi-Fi. And anything that Mirage has previously downloaded is already there on that laptop. It's good to go. You can take it on an airplane.
So that's the word. That's where you don't want the word streaming, because it's exactly like PBS or something.
Streaming implies being tethered to a network with something running in the data center.
Yeah.
Mirage, sure, we synchronize, but other than that, we don't really have a dependency for the end user to be on a network. And actually, Outlook offline mode is kind of a good example. So you've got Outlook, you're connected, you're emailing, blah, blah, blah. You download all your mail, you shut it down, you hop on an airplane without Wi-Fi. You can still open up that laptop. You can open up Outlook. You can reply to emails. You can use everything in there within Outlook basically normally. And then you close your laptop lid. You get to your hotel. You plug in. And then Outlook will do a sync with the Exchange server. And it'll say, oh, okay, you've got these 10 new replies. Here are your new messages. Here are the calendar invites you modified. So that's a good way to think of how Mirage does our complete desktop centralization.
Got it. Okay. So, and then, so while we're clearing up some misconceptions here, I also got, after the last one, there was a bare metal provisioning aspect to this, and there's not, that's built into Winova, but I did go back and try to find how I got that conception. And it was, it had to do with the fact that Intel was on the call as well. And Intel spoke of being able to push out an ISO via vPro. I can't remember the actual name of that technology, but ATM,
oh, that was
something
one of
like
their,
that.
Yeah,
yeah, and so
oh, like
the idea
IE,
though,
something, IDE redirection,
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, so well, so, it kind of like that, yeah. But so their solution for bare metal provisioning with Mirage was to deploy an ISO that contained a Windows PE boot image, and then and boot that device up. And then that Windows PE image also had the Mirage client on it, and then Mirage could take over from there. Is that and so I understand where I got the bare metal provisioning aspect from, but I've also heard of a USB stick option for bare metal provisioning,
right,
that
so,
is that I think Izzy was showing at VMworld even.
Sure. So yeah, I can definitely, you know, talk about bare metal stuff. So for the most part, you're right. One way or another, before you can install the Mirage client on a device, ultimately you need Windows XP or Windows 7 already installed on that device. So we're not a Pixie Boot bare metal solution or anything like that. That being said, if you have a bare metal laptop, we can facilitate the creation of a boot USB key, which will basically include a stripped-down version of Windows. It's not Windows PE, and I'll get to that in a second. It's kind of like a very vanilla-flavored Windows environment, Windows 7 environment, that's got the Mirage client baked into it that's already pre-pointing to a Mirage server. And what you would do is you'd provision that laptop with that Windows 7 image that has the Mirage client, and then once that laptop was online, the IT administrator could then do the disaster recovery wizard, which would bring back down all of the bits from that user's previous device. So we can create boot USB keys to help with the bare metal situation, but we can't do bare metal recovery over like a LAN or a WAN.
And there's no automated or centralized management
exactly,
approach to that.
No,
right?
Like no Pixie booting, basically.
I see.
So where Intel comes in is Intel can do bare metal stuff via their vPro technology. So if you can boot into a laptop via vPro, you can do what's called, I believe it was IDE redirection, where you could, like you said, basically boot off an ISO image somewhere that would also have the Mirage client and then initiate kind of that procedure that way. Now, the only correction I want to make is it wouldn't be Windows PE. Windows PE, from what I understand, does not support .NET 3.5 Service Pack 1, which is a requirement for the Mirage client. So it would be more like just a vanilla Windows 7 instance, maybe a couple gigabytes that has the Mirage client in it, but it wouldn't be Windows PE.
Gotcha. It was the Intel Active Management Technology, AMT, is
there
the thing that
go.
You can remotely, yeah.
So Don with BDI is saying, so now every user needs to carry one of those keys in case they're on the road and they lose their laptop? Well, I guess I would say that's one option, but you could probably also just restore that to VDI, right? So we
handle – I mean, in that situation, I would say no. The answer is not to give everyone a boot USB key. That's silly. But I would also say if an user lost their laptop, they're not going to go to Best Buy and buy a bare metal laptop. They're going to buy a laptop that's got Windows XP or Windows 7 on it.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's necessarily a problem.
Steve Ballmer will make sure you cannot buy a laptop that doesn't have Windows.
Pretty much. It's Windows, yeah. So what I would say is kind of what Brian said. And, we've talked about this. You know, VDI does have a few use cases. And one of the good use cases is to complement RDR solutions. So if you're on the road and you lose your laptop, you could basically from the data center, you could use our DR wizard to migrate. And actually, this is what Vittorio and I did on the day two keynote at VMworld recently. And we'll do it again in Barcelona shortly. So you could basically use the Mirage's DR wizard to migrate everything that was on that lost laptop to a persistent view desktop. And then you could access that via like a tablet or something or your phone even that you had with you. Run it like that. Mirage will keep all those changes synchronized. And then when you do get a replacement laptop that will obviously have XP or Windows 7, you could redo the DR disaster recovery wizard and migrate all of your stuff that's still synchronized and totally up to date back to that new device. So, you know, you can bounce your centralized virtual copy between different devices. It's not on demand. It's not follow me desktop, but you can move between physical and virtual and all that good stuff as you get, you know, new devices.
And so one of the chat room users is like, but wait, you can't do bare metal recovery over a LAN. And I want to take this one and be like, that is correct. This is not a bare metal recovery product. It needs Windows, but there's a billion solutions out there on how to get Windows onto bare metal. So like, I feel like that's not, I almost like this better that like, I don't want, you know, some Wanova VMware half-assed bare metal recovery. Like, it's like the same kind of people who write all their own like SID modification programs. I'm like, hey, Windows has a way to do that. Let's not, you know, like try and make your own. So that's cool.
Now, where I do like that kind of a situation is deploying these things into a VDI, like you said, rather than rolling it rather than having a user get a new machine or carry around a USB key. Brian mentioned just, you know, deploying it to a VDI. But in order to do that, there's the added layer of, and I don't mean layer in terms of layering, but there's that added part where we have to get Windows on into a VDI instance first before we can get the Mirage agent on there and then actually deploy the desktop to it.
Right. And I mean, you know, honestly, this has actually never been a showstopper either. You know, people have kind of requested. I think it would be like a nice to have, but we'd rather focus our engineering efforts on other stuff at this point, like integrating with Vue and things like that. So can we do a bare metal recovery over the network on a LAN? Technically, no, but any enterprise probably already has a tool that can, you know, get Windows on there anyway. Exactly like Brian said, it's usually not a showstopper. And, you know, if we did add that to the product, you know, it would add a little bit more complexity anyway. So we kind of like what we do and how we do it. And
speaking of showstoppers, Justin, I don't know if you're on if you got your headphones on, but I want some more coffee. I'm sorry to sound like a princess, but I'm stuck in here and it's a huge mistake. Oh, thank you so much. But the donut shop one, please.
He's like a page.
Justin, I'd like a Five Guys run.
So there's we have one of those Keurig machines, you know, and
I need it, Justin.
How those are better than regular coffee is beyond me. But if you put two cups, I mean, like, because it's always so bland, but you use those little K cups and make it do like a 4 ounce pour, then you throw that cup away, then you do a new K cup for another 4 ounces. And that's how you make your good coffee. But of course, now you're using
it's like an espresso.
Yeah, but now you're drinking like $2.50 cups, wow, like little plastic cups, you know, for those things. Anyway,
that's how they get you.
Tons of questions in the chat room around that are all related around the topic of when we're doing this restore. So let's say I've got my whole image and it's all synced, it's backed up in the data center, and I'm going to new hardware.
Okay.
And then so I've got generic copy Windows, pop that Mirage client for 4 megs on there, and then let her rip. And that does like the part one restore for the basic reboot, you know, all that sort of thing. Okay, what happens? There's like a bunch of scenarios. So like, what happens? A, how about if I'm different? If I'm different hardware, does sure. that like That's I got Acer piece of shit generic at Best Buy for $400 replaces my Dell Latitude official thing.
Right. So the good news is we're pretty much completely like hardware agnostic. As long as it's got Windows XP or Windows 7, that's fine. We have no HCL list. We're not.
Because the drivers are already there. Like, Windows is running on that thing. So,
exactly.
Like, clearly,
and
like,
that,
you don't.
That's another big misconception about Mirage. We have a feature called Driver Library. But for the most part, we pretty much just ignore drivers on a local endpoint. So, here's what our Driver Library feature actually does. And there's been some misconception around that. The Driver Library allows an IT administrator on the Mirage server side to import drivers and create driver profiles. And a driver profile would be something like, if a Dell Latitude E6410 running Windows 7 64-bit connects to the network, here are the drivers that would apply to that particular device. So the way that we use that driver library feature is only in a situation where an endpoint meets that rule and we scan Device Manager and find a missing or broken driver. So by and large, if you went to Best Buy and you bought a new laptop, the drivers are not going to be broken. And if they are, then you got a laptop that was just returned or something. So the drivers should already be there. And Mirage will just ignore the drivers. And that's one way we're driver agnostic. Our base layers will have drivers stripped out of them also. So our base layers and base images are driver agnostic.
Because you don't need that, because by definition, Windows is already on that thing. And whatever the hell they had to do to make Windows get on there,
exactly,
that's not your problem. That's done already.
Exactly. Because we are literally just a Windows operating, locally executing endpoint. Point, anything that Windows has already done for us, we have no reason or desire to reinvent the wheel. So we will fix a broken or missing driver. And again, we'll still leverage Windows to do that. We'll download the drivers we found from the Mirage server down to the device, and then we queue Windows plug and play and let them take care of it. So yeah, we leverage Windows for all that driver stuff. We can fix missing or broken ones. Other than that, you know, driver agnostic. Hardware agnostic.
Now, what about the other bits of Windows? So I got Windows, Windows 7 Enterprise Edition in the office with like SA and all that kind of stuff and like central license keys. But I've got Windows 7 Home when I bought that new Acer that's like been activated with my personal retail key. So do you convert Windows 7 Home into Windows 7 Enterprise when you're restoring?
Right. So if your previous image was Enterprise and you still have a valid license for it, then we can upgrade that. So, but again, it kind of depends on what option you select during the DR wizard. If you do the full system restore, we'll take you soup to nuts back to what you had.
You're sort of overriding.
Yeah, we'll kind of like blend in and override, exactly. And then if you for whatever reason you want to stick with Home, then just select the user installed apps, profile and data options, and then we'll kind of restore those logical layers without overriding the Home edition. So honestly, it's kind of funny. The Windows versioning and Windows licensing is one of the greater nuances of using Mirage, and it kind of has nothing to do with us. But another cool thing about Mirage that a lot of people also don't do is we do support that OEM license. So if you do go to Best Buy and you buy a laptop and they've got a Windows 7 OEM license, you can restore all of your data and user-installed apps and continue leveraging that OEM license instead of having to leverage a corporate volume license or kind of like double up, which is a problem with VDI sometimes.
Is it sort of
that's
like,
kind of necessity, isn't it, though? Because you're not allowed to drop an enterprise Windows 7 base image on top of an OEM image, right? Because
right.
Isn't that OEM image tied to the hardware?
Yeah, but no, you can do that. But I mean, you can put an enterprise image on top of the OEM, but you can't take the OEM image. Like if it was an OEM retail OEM license on your Acer, if you do a full backup into the cloud or into your data center, then you're not allowed to like put that on a VDI. So you guys would have to know. Do you look at license? Like, do you know that this was OEM license?
We have some code that's built in that'll kind of like figure some of this stuff out, and that's why I said it's a little nuanced. There's no kind of like one easy answer for all of the Microsoft Windows stuff. For example, if you buy hardware at Best Buy and it's got an OEM license and then you apply a base layer that's got a corporate volume license, then the corporate volume license will then kind of overwrite the OEM license on that device.
Yeah.
But if you didn't want to use a base layer with a volume license, you could just kind of continue using that OEM one.
And I guess by definition, if you're redeploying to VDI, you have SA anyway, so like it doesn't matter at this point.
Right.
So what happens if you have different – like with activation, I guess – These Windows Enterprise things don't really have to be there. You're sort of like these images are kind of pre-activated, I guess, right? Like you don't have to. It doesn't trigger reactivation.
I think that depends on whether or not we recognize the hardware or not. So Mirage will actually keep track of what endpoints have actually like been centralized with the Mirage system, and whether or not we queue like a reactivation. I think will kind of depend on that. So. Some of the Windows licensing stuff gets a little nitty gritty, as I'm sure everyone in the audience and on the planet probably understands and empathizes with. So that's actually one of the trickier nuances of stuff. But in general, we've done everything in our power to make it basically as seamless and as painless as possible, where we just kind of figure out what we've got to do based on what kind of like combination or situation we're in.
How about Office? So I can understand if you restore an entire system and this head of Office in it, which is activated, that's probably going to be fine. But if I restore just the application and user elements, is the user going to have to reactivate Office?
You can actually bake in an Office – using the Mirage Management Console, you can actually bake an Office key into Office if it's in a base layer. So whether or not it reactivates, I'm not actually entirely sure. So that's stump one of the live webcast.
We're 40 minutes in. That's not bad.
Stump one.
Yeah, I'll take that.
We need one of those machines with the buttons on it to with sound effects. Yeah.
Wah, wah, and a,
stump one. Yeah.
And a gong for the third one. So when I get to three, it's just like, all right, you're done.
Justin, we need a gong. And I don't want I don't want some like MP3 gong sound on the iPad. I want a gong.
You want Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom.
Yeah, like a gong, back here behind the.
$20 on Amazon.
Wow. It'll be here tomorrow.
It's a bargain.
$75 for a zildjian.
Ooh. That company's like 700 years old or something like that.
Yeah.
Wow. Anyway, so let's see. So we'll talk about that. So did people – so we talked about sort of, you know, how it restores with different hardware. Kind of tied to that, it's like a BYOC thing. Like, do you – I mean, I know – I recognize BYOC is more of like a legal structure sort of or philosophical structure as opposed to like raw technology. But
right. No,
do you see people using this with like BYOC? Or?
You know, I don't know if we have a lot of customers using it, and that's, you know, we may or we may not, and I'm just not familiar with it. But here's how, you know, we've kind of broken it down from a BYO perspective, and there's a number of angles you can do. If your end users want to buy their own like PC, you could at least provide them with all the DR capabilities, and that would be completely transparent to the end user. They'd also get file and directory level restore self-service on top of that. So it would have value add for a BYO situation just from a DR perspective, snapshots and stuff like that. If, however, IT wanted to say, you know what, part of our BYO policy is this. We're going to use Mirage to assign a corporate-based layer to your endpoint and keep that synchronized and patched and updated, but it's not going to modify any of your user stuff. That's another scenario that we've seen that people have interest in. And then the third one is the Mac situation. If someone wants to go out and buy a Mac, Mirage is – we don't natively support Mac, but a lot of IT departments will install Fusion. They'll install like a Windows 7 VM via Fusion on a Mac, and then IT can actually have complete control from a base layer or base image perspective on that Fusion VM. They can encapsulate the data and the policies and all that stuff. So the end user has, you know, their shiny Mac kind of like for home and personal use and work use, and they've also got their corporate VM that's being managed via Mirage via IT. So those are the three scenarios that we've most commonly had interest in.
And so while we're still kind of on this, you know, restoring and how people restore and that kind of stuff. So if you have – if your corporate image, your lost laptop is 32 bits and the one you buy at Best Buy is 64-bit Windows.
We can go up, but we can't go down, which I think is pretty common. So if you had a Windows 7 32-bit and you wanted to migrate to a Windows 7 64-bit scenario, that would be fine.
And what can you do there? You don't overwrite the system stuff. It's just kind of you're putting back – what you believe is sort of the application and the user.
Right. And I believe this would come down to a lot of the kind of like the layering secret sauce where we're like, okay, we're going from Windows 7 32-bit to 64-bit. So there's now considerations with like program files, parentheses, x86.
Does it know that? So it knows that, oh, this one on here was 32 in the program files, but I need to put it in the program files x86 folder.
Yeah, I would assume that we'd have to know that. I've never actually personally done a test of 32 to 64, but our engineering team has told me it works just fine. So I would hope. I mean, if that,
like the president.
If that popped in my mind as something that has to take place, then I would hope it popped in their mind too. So.
Wrong. Okay, that's a follow-up.
It's like a half stump.
That's a follow-up. Like right. That's not a stump. That's a
stump,
follow-up.
But that's a marketing. Like, I don't know that, but I believe it should be fine.
it's like how Mythbusters went from busted to confirmed, and then they added plausible later.
Wow. I don't know if we can do it, but yeah, let's say that we can.
Good. Yeah.
When in doubt, absolutely.
So what about – so because the same would be true – so, because on the same thing, so the demo you did with Vittorio at VMworld was cool, but you went from XP to 7 in the VMworld demo. But, like, there's a lot of, like, application compatibility issues and stuff like that. So I'd imagine if I'm just pulling the data back in, that's cool. But if I have my XP laptop I've been using for 5 years, come on, ain't no way that's going to 7.
So that was actually one of the nuances. So one thing to keep in mind with the way Mirage does Windows 7 migrations, and we do it extremely well, but like all the other solutions out there, when you upgrade an XP device to Windows 7, we're not going to migrate the user-installed apps. We can't guarantee compatibility or stability. So what you saw with Vittorio, and this was a legitimate demo. I know that because I built it, and I was actually the voice of IT behind the scenes for anyone that was there.
Oh, yeah.
So what we did was – when you upgrade a device from Windows XP to Windows 7, ultimately what you're doing is you're assigning a Windows 7 base layer to that Windows XP device, and then we're swapping all that stuff in. And that's how we're able to maintain the user data and the user profile and mix all that stuff back in. So for what we did is the Windows XP device obviously had like Office. So we installed Office 2010 into the Windows 7 base layer. So the way that you can actually do app deployment through a Windows 7 migration is to just install the core stuff into that Windows 7 base layer, and then that will all be there on the upgraded laptop. And then for the other kind of like, you know, nuanced applications, the tens of thousands of random apps that users have installed over the years, well, they've got to unfortunately probably go, you know, find the executable and reinstall it. Or IT can bake the important, or IT will bake the important stuff into that base layer. So things like Office, Acrobat Reader, all that.
So it's not going to do it for user installed apps.
Correct. User installed apps would be a casualty.
I tweeted that during the live, or maybe I mentioned it in the live blog of the VMworld keynote, and your goons at I think it's the Palo Alto goons, not the Wenova based goons. They were pissed. And they did, like, you know, they called the sales rep at TechTarget and, like, why is Brian, like, hate us and all this kind of stuff. He's trashing us on Twitter. This is legit, right? And I'm like, because I feel like that was a legitimate thing. Like, okay, so it's because it's not doing – because I think I tweeted and I was like, oh, I guess Vitoro didn't install any applications in the last 4 years. And that's legit, right?
Right. So, yeah, I mean, that it's definitely a legitimate you know, piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
And, you know, our aim was certainly not to be misleading during the keynote. We only had, you know, 3 minutes to kind of do a lot of stuff. And that's one of the reasons we can't go into a lot of detail. But for all intents and purposes, yeah, you would have to take the applications that were most important to Vittorio and bake that into the base layer for him and for your other users. And then ultimately, Vittorio, if he had wanted to work on something outside of like Office or Acrobat or whatever, some, you know, nuanced app, he would have had to install that. But the good news is all his data would be there, all his profile would be there. And IT didn't have to do anything outside the realm of our automation to get that stuff back, which I think, you know, that in and of itself is still, you know, we talked about that third of the puzzle. There's your profile and customizations, and then there's user data, and then there's user installed apps. So for Windows 7 migration, we can at least handle two-thirds of that for you, whereas with most solutions, you know, they'll do one-third and then a sixth and then another sixth.
Yeah, well, and to be clear, I mean, we're talking an XP to 7 migration. If it's just a purely DR thing, then fine, you can read the art back to XP and it's no problem.
Absolutely.
And so the only time this is like sort of really an issue is if the user installed these applications themselves over the past 4 years, they can do it again.
Right. The only time that we won't migrate over the user installed apps is only when you're upgrading from Windows XP to Windows 7.
Yeah.
In all other DR scenarios, Windows 7 to Windows 7, whether it's virtual to physical, new hardware, whatever.
32 to 64,
that'll be fine. Yeah.
So to be clear, I wasn't saying that the keynote was misleading. I was saying call off your goons. So, like, when you on your way back down to San Jose, like, maybe make some calls to the marketing folks at VMware and tell them that, like, I don't hate. This isn't a place of hate where I'm coming from. So you can educate them that no, he was right. It's cool.
I'm trying. Believe me. I mean, there's over 13,000 people at VMware, and you know, there's the good news is there's a lot of excitement around the Wenova acquisition. VMware's intent is in no way, shape, or form to get rid of us. They're on board with, you know, physical devices. They brought us on board to help manage that situation, to complement Vue for the use cases where Vue doesn't make sense. But unfortunately, the downside to excitement is people took all the holes that they saw in Vue and they kind of just jammed Mirage into that hole.
Yeah,
and they're like, oh, so as the
every criticism to Vue in the past 6 years combined, you are the salvation.
Exactly.
So, right. as the PMM, so when's Mirage replacing Composer?
Exactly. So as the PMM for Mirage, I've heard some interesting things that our product purportedly did from even, you know, within VMware. And I'm working hard to fix that. And it's great that people are excited. And I'm working extremely hard to make sure that people understand exactly what we are, but more importantly, what we are not. Because, you know, desktop virtualization, it's a big space. And you could hear things like layering or streaming. And you could just hear that term and then make an assumption based on what you know and what is accurate about other products. But unfortunately, we use some of that terminology different just from Wenova.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's easy to accidentally think that maybe we do one thing or another thing. And that's, you know, my job is to correct that. And that's why we do things like this to get awareness out there and understand what we do and what we don't do.
Well, let's talk about life on VMware. Because VMware, you know, they were way – I mean, they try to say that, you know, VDI is not – the answer for everything, and there's other scenarios that aren't VDI. But let's be honest,
they try
never,
now.
Yeah, yeah, they never said that until they bought Wenova. I mean, come on, you know, they never. Like, I saw it through so many, you know, VMware presentations, just like vibrating with anger.
Right.
Like, we named the book the VDI Delusion probably because of that company.
I think from the end user computing group's perspective, it's like they had Vue to sell, and that's basically what they sold. And I think, like your book mentions, I mean, people said people kind of came to their own conclusion about what VDI maybe could do and what they thought it would do and how it would evolve and stuff like that. And it's obviously still evolving, and it's still great for certain use cases. You know, like Follow Me Desktop is a good example where Vue just makes more sense than Mirage, and that's fine. But I think, you know, VMware, like, I understand as a company, you want to be evangelical and you want to get excitement and people passionate about stuff, and maybe they did oversell it a little bit. So, but the good news is VMware kind of had the foresight to say, you know what, VDI isn't the solution for everything. Vue is not going to solve everyone's problems. Physical devices are a real problem. Managing something like Fusion is a real customer use case. It's a real business case. What are we going to do about it? And they bought Winova. So to their credit, I think they acknowledged that maybe Vue was not the be-all, end-all solution that maybe they hoped it would be. And, you know, I get that from a, you know, long-term vision kind of perspective. But now Mirage is in play, and now I think Mirage is a beautiful complement to Vue. There are places where Vue will absolutely make sense. There are places where Mirage will absolutely make sense. And there's some stuff in the middle where some kind of a hybrid deployment will make sense. And once we integrate the two products together, that'll be an even cooler, more holistic solution. So
what can you talk about?
Sorry, go ahead, Gabe.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, what can you talk about with regards to integration? I mean, is there anything publicly that you can speak about?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk very kind of like vaguely about it. And the only reason I'm comfortable talking about some of the details, it's a very complicated architectural and engineering challenge, right? We want to make sure that we do it right. So I think if I was going to say what is our end goal, the end goal would basically be where you have one centralized image in your data center, and then you execute that image where it's appropriate, but you're ultimately using one product, one management console, all that stuff. So whether you're taking a centralized, you know, virtual desktop, and I'm using that term very vaguely to represent what Vue and what Mirage store, but ultimately you'll have, you know, one entity, and you can either execute it centrally via Vue, or you can execute it locally using Mirage and all of our WAN optimizations, or you can execute it kind of locally via a VM that's on an Apple or something like that. So I think the ultimate goal, if I was going to explain integration, is one centralized image and then execute where appropriate at the time, and then you can kind of bounce between that architecture. So that's where we're going. And again, just PMM disclaimer, lots of work to do. Probably not,
sure.
Not in the next couple months or anything like that. But I think that's the overall vision. I think it's a pretty awesome vision, actually.
It is. And that's the kind of thing that we've been speculating about is, you know, executing the desktop in the most appropriate location for that user for that moment.
Exactly.
Any idea like how the bits are going to get from point A to point B or how they're going to be shipped around, that kind of a thing?
Yeah.
Because
that's
the cool. I mean, that has to be a cool solution.
Yeah, that I have no idea, honestly, and that's just because I'm not in those meetings. So I get the same roadmap presentation that everyone else gets without a lot of the engineering, nitty gritty details. So I don't know how they're going to do it. I know it's obviously part of it's going to leverage a lot of our WAN optimization stuff. Part of it may leverage additional VMware products. So you may say things like Project Octopus, get pulled into play and stuff like that for some of the file stuff. So I think the cool thing is that VMware has we have a lot of technology. We have a lot of good technology. And so now we've got this kind of like puzzle, and we've got our end goal of, this vision. What do we want to do? And we've got all these puzzle pieces that we can arrange in like different ways and different orders. And we've got to figure out what is the most effective, most efficient, most awesome solution that we can build based on the technologies that we have. And how can we make it like one holistic solution? And we're working extremely hard on that, actually, to be honest, in a lot of different areas that go outside just that go beyond just Vue and Mirage. But some cool stuff coming down the wire.
Is there sort of you mentioned earlier something about persistent desktops? And, so you read the VDI delusion, our view on our opinion on persistent desktops, which is I like them. And
I think most people do, actually.
Yeah, and
not
so,
IT because they're more expensive currently, but
yeah, but so I mean, because really, what you do is sort of about persistent desktops in a lot of ways. But VMware has been really kind of hitting it hard with the Vue Composer and non-persistent and breaking the layers, but they use that word layers differently. So
right.
I guess there's
right.
When you're looking at that, you could almost see another place for the technology, like in the Vue product. So maybe not even necessarily for doing client, centrally managed, execute locally type stuff, but even if you want to use Vue with persistent, run Mirage in all your Vue images. And
yeah, you could absolutely do that. I mean, you could literally do that today. If you have a Vue implementation today that's using persistent desktops, you could install the Mirage client on those desktops, and then you could do, you know, at the very least the DR stuff, or your end users could get self-service file and directory recovery. You could do image management if you wanted to. If by chance you had a persistent pool of Windows XP devices, you could upgrade them to Windows 7. And I'm not super familiar with how you would, you know, do a lot of this backend stuff with Vue, so I don't know if it'd be easier or harder. But in theory, you know, we're testing a lot of this stuff out right now. We know that you can install Mirage into a persistent Vue pool, and it works just fine. You have to do maybe like a few little, like, you know, small modifications, obviously. But out of the box, it's pretty close to basically just working normally. And then right now we're actually doing a lot of metric testing, capacity testing, things like that, seeing how the overall Vue implementation reacts to having Mirage installed inside it and stuff like that.
How does Mirage how do people buy this thing? Is it just built into Vue, or is it still a separate product?
Right now, there are two separate products. Mirage has its own official VMware SKUs, so we're selling it today, the Winova.
Is it called VMware Mirage or VMware Winova Mirage? Or what
right
is
now,
it?
It's VMware Mirage. So and
Winova is kind of going away as like a brand?
Yeah, basically.
Sorry, I was trying to read and talk at the same time.
Yeah, it's difficult.
I can't even like read and type or like,
well,
talk
well, the,
and type
the problem
at
the is the chat room is pretty active, and so you have to kind of catch up while while talking.
Yeah. Right.
My gosh, we're like it's kind of funny because the topics I want to talk about, and we've been adding to this list, you know, through the chat. That's just about complete. So we're seeing what kind of use cases do we see Mirage. I feel like we kind of talked about a lot of the use cases. I don't know if there's anything else.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you derive from our conversation what the use cases are, obviously DR, single image management across physical or virtual devices, Windows 7 migrations, BYO type situations, those are obviously the big use cases that I would think of, and those all basically fall under the desktop management arena, especially if you have physical clients. And then remote branch offices is another great one. I mean, if you have offices all over the world and you're trying to do image management on 50 laptops at 100 different sites, you know, VDI is probably not going to be your solution just because of a bandwidth perspective. So, you know, we have a feature called Branch Reflector, and I know we're kind of running low here. So Branch Reflector is basically what allows you to enable one endpoint at any remote office to be the sole client who downloads bits from the Mirage server. So you can push out an image update from the Mirage server to one endpoint at a remote branch office, and then the Branch Reflector will distribute it over to its peers at that office on the local network. So we're extremely effective over WAN and at branch offices, even when you have, you know, a kind of a tiny amount of bandwidth or whatever there. So,
and that's just a
do you specify that, or is there like an election process that takes place where it automatically decides which one of the Branch Reflector is?
Yeah, so all you would do is you'd go in the Mirage Management Console, you'd find an endpoint, you'd right-click it and enable it as a Branch Reflector. You can do multiple Branch Reflectors at a site. And then if there are multiple Branch Reflectors, we'll kind of we'll figure that out. And then in terms of the clients, the Branch Reflector will figure that out automatically also based on IP ranges and ping latency.
So best practice is not to make every one of them a Branch Reflector.
Yeah, that
doesn't have to be a server. It can just be like the receptionist PC or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but then they're all synchronizing back to the data center, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What about so the question on the chat, Winova had a department installed apps in beta. Was mentioned before the acquisition.
Right.
Is that still in the works, or what's?
So we did. We had a departmental app layer function, and basically what that did is you had your base layers, then you could also build an additional app layer. There were some combination math problems with that in terms of how we did it. An endpoint could only have one base layer and one app layer. So if you had 100 apps and there were 250 combinations of those apps, that's a lot of app layers. So ultimately, our app layer functionality was it started as experimental. It stayed experimental. We've basically removed it because we're re-architecting it. We realized that our original design of the app layer feature was not all that it could be, so we're literally re-engineering it so that we'll have much better granular app delivery and management.
And the all the engineering now, this is, I mean, is Winova people moving into VMware offices, or is this or is it sort of a separate thing?
VMware now, I guess, has an official Netanya, Israel engineering office. That's where the Winova engineers are. And they're still there. They're still all on board. And we're probably going to get a few additional engineers in, I guess, maybe in Palo Alto. I don't know actually where the engineering team is. But so we'll obviously get additional engineers wherever they may be. But our Netanya engineering office is still operational.
All right. Well, we're just rolling up at the end of our hour. Like, this is a lot to talk about. Tom, if you have any other thoughts or anything else you wanted to add or mention. Anyone in the chat room, sort of last call. Gabe, if you have anything. But my my question sheet is blank.
The only thing I had on there to bring up was to ask how similar the devices need to be in order if you wanted to deploy the base to different devices. Because I think that's where the driver library comes in and the complexity around that. I know that's not a term that marketing people like to hear, but in terms of how closely related does each device have to be in order to deploy a base?
One second.
Sorry. Excellent.
All right. So the last part of the question was how closely each of these devices need to be to deploy like one base across multiple devices.
Right. Honestly, all you need is the same OS, basically. So, we're driver agnostic on the base layer side of things, and we're basically going to blend all the changes into your Windows endpoint, right? So, what I typically do in demos, for example, is I have a VMware ESX virtual machine, Windows 7, very vanilla. I install apps, I install patches, all that stuff. I capture base layer, and then I've applied that base layer to laptops and desktops and Fusion VMs and all that stuff. So the base layer I used in the demo with Fatorio, for example, the Windows 7 base layer, ultimately I applied that to a number of different types of devices. So the base layers are pretty agnostic hardware-wise.
Because it's not like – so, okay, I got the computer I bought at the store, and I installed the Winova agent on there, and it does its thing. And then IT says, give me a brand new base layer. But it's still a file-level thing, right? So it's still looking at – it's not like an ISO or a VHD that's overlaying. It's like literally going to look at that and see, okay, so I want the base layer, but you got this kernel file, you have all this kind of stuff, so it doesn't have to put that back down. The drivers that are already on that thing, so I can deploy my existing enterprise base layer onto hardware I've never seen before, and it's going to leave the drivers alone because those are already on the hardware.
Exactly. So the base layers, you can apply them into like pretty much any hardware. All the OEM stuff will still be there. So if you didn't have Office 2010, but you had all this OEM software originally, the OEM stuff will still be there, but then Office 2010 will also be there.
Now, the only option to wipe out the OEM cramp.
Yeah, actually, that's what I was going to say. So a new feature that we have in our 3.6 release is image provisioning. So our standard base layer operation is to blend our stuff into an existing Windows endpoint. But now we have implemented image provisioning. So if you want to assign a base layer and overwrite an endpoint, you can now do that with our base layers. So if you have like a lab environment and you actually want to get rid of all that stuff and bring it back to a complete base layer, 100% compliant state, you can now overwrite the stuff on the endpoint if you want to.
But so it's still going to respect drivers that are like you overwrite?
Drivers, that's stump number two. Drivers,
that's stump number four, my friend.
No, I think that's number two. I believe that the drivers will still be agnostic, but I'm not 100% sure. So we'll have to see if we bake when you do. Yeah, I'm not sure.
All right.
I'm going to leave it at that.
Gong.
Perfect timing, though.
Tom Nickel, thank you so much for making the ride up here from your home in San Jose.
Sure, my pleasure.
Gabe, thank you for doing this instead of having lunch.
What's great is we've had two entire hours now about this technology, and we could probably do another hour. I mean, it's cool. I like that we can do this, and we can do this with the chat room and hear people chime in and that kind of a thing, because this is cool stuff, and I love this format.
Sure. Yeah. I'd be happy to come back anytime.
Yeah. So, and to all you for chatting with us, thank you so much for listening. This was Brian and Gabe Live Special Edition, sponsored by VMware to make this conversation happen. But as you can see, as you've heard, who sponsors the show is in no way related to how cordial we are to those who we're speaking with. But this is good
Gong.
Stuff. So all you, thank you so much. Tom, again, thank you. This is Brian Madden in San Francisco. So long.
Have a nice day.
Thanks, guys.